July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
And marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, July 6, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Coming to you live and direct from beautiful Rolla J Studios in the lovely summer village of Portland, Oregon, where marijuana has been legal for 5 days now, and yet the trains are still running. People are still going to their jobs on time. The sky has not fallen. It's a beautiful time to be living here in Portland. A little bit hot. We were having our 90-degree weather bout. I know my friends listening in Arizona want to throw stuff at me, but it hits 90 here. Everybody freaks out. Oh my God, it's so hot. So yeah, we're going through our little heat wave here, although I've been confined to Rolla J Studios, the only air-conditioned part of this house. So it's been a nice place to be. Been online. I kind of stayed inside for the 4th of July weekend. Didn't go out, didn't do any fireworks, didn't do any of that kind of stuff. I did make a bike ride to Fresh Buds Dispensary and spoke with the owner there, Jay, and got his take on legalization night. We'll talk a little bit about that in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. But coming up on the show today, we've got all sorts of great stuff for you. First of all, it is Monday. That means time for our regular dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Our cannabis Q&A begins at 1:30, and our phone number to call in here is 844-207-2346. That's 844-420 Radio. Or you can dial direct at 971-533-7111 or go to 420radio.org and click that live chat button, and you can get your question typed into our chat room. We got some folks in the chat room that'll help you out if you need some help there. Keydet, that's Left Wing Larry, he's in the chat room, as well as Johnny Utah, Cosp 420 dude to Roland Reverend and Run Around 420. One of them guys will help you get into the chat room. Also coming up on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant where I'm going to go in depth on Pacific Northwest medical marijuana drama queens. Yeah, we've had some changes to medical marijuana in Oregon and most especially Washington, and my God, you'd think they'd repealed the whole program. We'll tell you what has happened and where that places the Pacific Northwest medical marijuana programs after the fallout. Where do they rank? We'll figure that out in the radical rant. Also coming up on the show today, in drug war data mining, Drug Policy Alliance is out with their report on the results of I-502, Washington State's legalization measure. How much money did they save? What happened to the crime rates? Did more kids start using pot? We'll answer all those questions in the drug war data mines. Coming up in behind the headlines, we get to talk about someone who means a whole lot to me here at 420 Radio. In fact, a man without whom 420 Radio would not exist, but haven't been able to talk about him much because he's been trying to keep a low profile. But he broke that profile today in The Oregonian, a feature on my friend Travis Maurer, the man who brought legalization to Oregon in 2014. Haven't heard that name yet, have you? You've heard Anthony Johnson, right? Well, we'll tell you how all that worked out and why Travis is pretty much the guy who brought us legalization. It's an amazing story. But before all that, we get to the 420 Radio news in the headlines today. We're going to talk about marijuana dispensaries versus liquor stores in Portland, the First Church of Cannabis in Indiana, Colorado Springs data on medical marijuana crime and tax revenue, presidential candidates and their embrace of big marijuana, or at least their donations. And remember the Wolf of Wall Street, the Wolf of Wall Street movie? One of those guys is getting involved in medical marijuana in New York, or at least trying to. We'll tell you all about that and more coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Big Daddy thinks.
What's happening? Big Daddy here, and I want you cool cats to come and chill over at my pad, the Funky Roller Rink.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be grooving every Thursday night, right here on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
What can I do when you got me going?
Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum. Elegance and sophistication concentrated.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 6, 2015. The number of medical marijuana dispensaries has grown dramatically over the past few months. Licensed dispensaries outnumber liquor stores in Portland almost 3-1. Soon, those dispensaries may be able to sell to any adult. An Oregon bill is now sitting on the governor's desk that would allow medical marijuana dispensaries to begin selling retail pot to the public on October 1st. Currently, there are at least 97 medical marijuana dispensaries in Portland, compared to 35 liquor stores. That's how Portland's KGW News reported this story, as that bill awaits the governor's signature that would legalize marijuana sales to all adults from those dispensaries. However, there are currently 47 pending liquor license applications in Portland and 3,277 establishments currently holding liquor licenses in Portland alone. This has been another example of "there's more dispensaries than Starbucks" scaremongering that ignores all of the places one can buy not just coffee, but any sort of caffeinated beverage. The First Church of Cannabis, formed to expose the hypocrisy of the homophobic Religious Freedom Restoration Act, recently held its first service on the east side of Indianapolis. Dozens of people, many wearing tie-dye clothing, danced to funk music under the image of a large marijuana leaf and listened to a sermon by the church's founder, 59-year-old Bill Levin, whose church leadership is designated by the title Grand Poobah. During the sermon, Levin mocked Republican legislators, calling them clowns and saying their phony religious act had polluted and embarrassed the state. The service included dancing, comedy routines, and personal stories about the value of medical marijuana. Levin had scheduled a group smoke-in as the final part of the service, but cannabis is still illegal in Indiana, and Indianapolis police had surrounded the church. Officers were also posted on nearby street corners. So instead, Levin symbolically lit a large cigar, and many of the parishioners lit cigarettes. As the number of medical marijuana shops and dispensary-related crimes in Colorado Springs has fallen over the past 5 years, medical pot tax revenue in El Paso County has soared. In June 2010, Colorado Springs had 303 unique addresses or locations associated with medical marijuana licenses. Medical marijuana stores and growers were the targets of burglaries or attempted burglaries 42 times that year. But as of June 26, Colorado had just 152 actively licensed locations dealing with medical marijuana. Burglars have attempted or succeeded to steal from such businesses just 4 times this year, as of mid-June. El Paso County's tax revenue from medical marijuana will likely top $2 million this year, based on forecasts. That's more than double what medical marijuana brought in during fiscal year 2011-2012, when revenue was just less than $1 million. Recreational marijuana isn't sold inside Colorado Springs city limits, and revenue data reflects only medical marijuana taxes. Presidential candidates are talking about marijuana in ways unimaginable not long ago. White House hopefuls in both parties are taking donations from people in the new marijuana industry, which is investing heavily in political activism as a route to expanded legalization, and landed its first major candidate, Rand Paul, at a trade show last month. Several Republicans, like Democrats, are saying they won't interfere with states that are legalizing a drug still forbidden under federal law. And at conservative policy gatherings, Republicans are discussing whether drug sentences should be eased. Tim Cullen, owner of Colorado Harvest Company, a chain of medical and recreational marijuana dispensaries, attended a Hillary Rodham Clinton fundraiser in New Mexico last month and talked to the Democratic candidate about her position on legalizing pot. Cullen said, quote, "She's not outwardly hostile to the idea, which is a big step forward. She's willing to openly talk about it, at least." A former Wolf of Wall Street has his eyes on another pot of gold. Dean Petkanis' new company is among the 43 entities vying for one of 5 lucrative medical marijuana licenses in New York State, an eclectic group that includes a hospital group whose boss previously worked for an ex-governor and 2 nursing home operators who run a facility at the center of a recent scandal. "Now it's a waiting game," said Petkanis, who worked for 3 years at Stratton Oakmont, the pump-and-dump brokerage featured in the 2013 Martin Scorsese-directed film. He now heads Long Island-based medical marijuana company Canna Life Sciences, which is eyeing 700 acres in Buffalo for a green grow site. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 6, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
.420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the 4th Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
For Behind the Headlines today, we're talking about an article in the Oregonian today that is called How Travis Maurer Went from Missouri Pot Bust to Masterminding Oregon's Marijuana Initiative. And if that name's not familiar to you, it's not surprising. But Travis Maurer, to those of us in the Oregon legalization community, we've all known he's been the man behind the scenes who put together Oregon legalization for 2014. The story begins with him crossing the Burnside Bridge during the Burnside Burn and saying, "I can't believe we did this." He's 40 years old, and just 6 years before, back when he was 34, 6 years ago, he was living in Missouri, and he was the victim of a raid, a narcotics raid at his home. He had some false walls built into his home and hundreds of marijuana plants that he was growing. According to the article, he remembers standing up and urging the officers not to shoot his dogs, and then he turned to see his wife Leah on the floor with a shotgun to her head and, as it turned out, having a miscarriage. It was an image, he says, he will never forget. And so that was the catalyzing moment for Travis, where he went from being an underground, illegal, black market marijuana dealer and grower in Missouri. He pleaded guilty to the felony marijuana charge, moved his wife and two kids to Oregon. Now they've got a third child. And decided in Oregon he'd fight to legalize the drug. And part of what brought him to Oregon was Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson's also from Missouri, and they were high school friends. So when Anthony moved out here, he started doing a lot of work with the medical marijuana community. He was behind the 2010 initiative for dispensaries, Measure 74, that failed. And, of course, was the chief petitioner for our legalization that passed. Anthony ended up being the public face of marijuana legalization here in Oregon because the campaign smartly, and Travis, to his credit, recognized that having a convicted grow felon from Missouri be your lead spokesperson for marijuana legalization wasn't the right move. And that just goes, you know, says a lot about Travis and his character recognizing this, because there's a lot of people who are ego-driven in this movement. There's a lot of people who want credit for legalization. And Travis said, no, I wouldn't be the right person to put in front of this. So he became a medical marijuana grower here in the state of Oregon and made money on that. So, you know, when you hear me talking about how people have gamed the medical marijuana system, Exhibit A, Travis Maurer gamed the medical marijuana system in order to grow and sell marijuana and used a lot of that money to put together the team of legal and political professionals necessary to pass marijuana legalization. Now, all the professionals said, wait till the presidential election, wait till 2016. You're not going to get enough pot-friendly voters in 2014. But Travis has been listening to my show and had, in fact, if it weren't for Travis Maurer, I wouldn't be here. He funded what was originally National Cannabis Radio the first 3 months after I got myself stupidly fired from Normal. I wouldn't be here talking to you today if Travis hadn't planted that initial seed funding to get me going. So there's your fair disclosure, right? But Travis talked his way into the good graces of Ethan Nadelman and Graham Boyd. And I'll tell you, I can testify, Ethan Nadelman can't say enough good stuff about Travis Maurer. Ethan Nadelman, as you know, is the head of the Drug Policy Alliance. Graham Boyd is the conservator of the Peter Lewis estate and some other rich families who donate to drug policy reform. So the big policy guy and the big money guy in marijuana legalization, he got in touch with them. And again, smartly recognizing it doesn't matter what language you have. It doesn't matter what your polls are, what your grassroots support is. If you don't have the money and institutional support, you're not going to legalize marijuana. So we got Ethan and Graham involved. They financed a $5 million campaign. That's all it cost in Oregon, $5 million. And we got ourselves a 12-point victory, the biggest victory of the four states that have legalized marijuana in 2014, when Marijuana Policy Project and Rob Campia specifically were threatening us. It was literally a threat not to go for 2014, because if we did, they wouldn't fund us in 2016. Travis had the central role in putting those teams together, getting that money together. And Adam Davis, a Portland pollster, says, quote, "If it wasn't for Travis, I don't think we would have gotten to this point." So thank you so much, Travis, and thank you for now coming out to the media and letting your role be known in this.
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
It's an amazing story. It talks about his role, his work with Peter Zuckerman, one of the top campaigners who had worked so hard for marriage equality in this state. the firm of Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt, and the lawyer there, Dave Kopelak, who was a trusted counselor involved in the framing of Measure 91. It's an amazing story, and I'm glad it's finally getting out. I'll put the link up in the chat room. We're back right after this.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, and I want you to know it's never too late to join me at the Funky Roller Rink every Thursday night, right here on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
I like it like that.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
The Drug Policy Alliance has come up with a status report. The title is Marijuana Legalization in Washington After 1 Year of Retail Sales and 2.5 Years of Legal Possession. Drug Policy Alliance has this up on their website right now, and I'll give you basic take-home information from this. The number one big accomplishment of I-502 in Washington State, of course, are the end of the arrests of adult marijuana consumers. But it's not just the end of the arrests of people who were in possession of an ounce or less, you know, what has become legal. According to data from the Washington State Administrative Office of the Courts, court filings for low-level marijuana offenses, adults 21 years and older, now that would be your misdemeanor marijuana possession, 40 grams or less. Now 28 grams was made legal, so yeah, those are going to go away. But you still have 29 to 40 grams. It's still a crime in Washington State. So those arrests have dropped 98%. In 2011, there were 6,879 misdemeanor marijuana court filings. In 2013, there were 120. 120 people busted for 40 grams or less. Now, the data indicate that marijuana filings dramatically decreased while court filings for other drugs remained fairly constant. And as anticipated, legalizing possession for marijuana age 21 and older significantly reduced marijuana-related court filings. But for other marijuana law violations and convictions, according to the Crime in Washington report, marijuana law violations decreased 63% from 2012. There were 6,196 of them. To 2,316 of them in 2014. A two-thirds decrease in all marijuana crimes. All arrests. Growing. Home grows. Still illegal. Possessing over 28 grams. Still illegal. Selling marijuana. Still illegal. And of all those crimes, two out of the three people who would have been busted didn't get busted. And the Washington State Caseload Forecast Council on convictions, marijuana-related convictions for any remaining marijuana-related crime, decreased 81%, down from 575 to 111. So people who get marijuana criminal records for any possible marijuana crime in the state of Washington, 4 out of 5 of them, that didn't happen to, thanks to legalizing an ounce. Now, of course, the state spent over $200 million on marijuana enforcement between 2000 and 2010. So we got to recognize here that these changes, that data I just referred to, means millions of dollars saved in the state of Washington. Now, crime rates. Violent crime has declined and remained at an overall historic low, 40-year historic low. Violent crime decreased 10% between 2011 and 2014, including a 13% decrease in the murder rate. Burglaries decreased 6%, and overall property crime rates remained steady across the state. Now, correlation is not causation, but it didn't go the other way either. We didn't see crime spiking. We didn't see mayhem in the streets because marijuana became legalized. Tax revenue. According to the Department of Revenue and the Liquor Control Board, tax revenue from retail marijuana sales has amounted to $83 million, not including revenue from licenses and fees. $83 million in 1 year. The crash risk. Oh my God, there'll be stoned mayhem on the freeways. There'll be all sorts of stone drivers. There'll be all sorts of danger. Well, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the number of traffic fatalities in Washington dropped after the first year of legal possession and use. Now, we don't have data beyond 2013, but preliminary figures for 2014 show that the number of traffic fatalities had remained stable for the entire country, including the Pacific Northwest. So again, we haven't seen an increase in traffic fatalities, even as they've seen an increase in drivers testing positive for THC. We're not seeing any associated risks or wrecks with that. What about the children? What won't somebody please think of the children? According to the Washington State Healthy Youth Survey, which, by the way, is funded with I-502 revenues, there are no new significant trends in youth marijuana use. Since voters approved I-502, youth use has remained stable. Between 2012 and 2014, usage rates for 8th and 10th graders decreased slightly, and similar rates for 12th and 6th graders remain unchanged. And the people of Washington State, what do they think? They got to live with I-502. Remember, they voted for this 56%, like 55.9, something like that, 56. A 2015 poll found that 56% of the voters support the law. But the opposition went down to 37%, a decrease of 7 points. It used to be 56-44. Now it's 56-37, with the rest of them, don't care one way or the other. And more than three quarters of the people, 77% of the people of Washington, believe I-502 has had either a positive impact or no effect whatsoever in their lives. Drug Policy Alliance, Marijuana Legalization in Washington Report.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message, making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A. Our phone lines are open toll-free at 844-207-2346, or you can dial 84-420-RADIO. Having something weird going on with my Skype, so it took me a second, but I think we've got Dr. Mitch on the line. How are you doing, sir?
Having a nice day. How about you?
Oh, it's a fantastic day here in legal Oregon, still recovering from the freedom that we've all been experiencing the past week. That and the high temperatures.
I'm still recovering from my envy.
we'll bring that to you. We'll get that legalization flowing east. I know it. I can feel it. Hey, folks, also, if you got a question for Dr. Mitch, you can get it into our chat room. Go to 420radio.org, scroll down a bit. You'll find the live chat button. People in the chat will tell you how to get involved. So, Dr. Mitch, there's all sorts of interesting things going on here while we wait for some questions. And there's a bunch having to do with the children. One of these says there's a report out that middle schoolers who viewed medical marijuana ads were more likely to be marijuana users. Have you seen that study?
Well, yeah, and I want to be cautious about it because they're making it sound like this was some amazing longitudinal research that they did. And it's not quite as clean as all that. I mean, what a surprise. The ones who were actually more likely to get the opportunity to see the ad are in places where it's normative to use. And it's not quite as clean. And then Liz D'Amico, the lead author, is actually, you know, somebody I know and really like. And she was super cautious in the paper. But unfortunately, the media coverage has to be quick and dirty, and so it makes it sound like just seeing these ads suddenly made them turn into potheads or something.
Right. So basically, these kids could be living in California and where you can see an ad, and you compare them to a kid in Utah where there are no ads. Well, really, it's more being in California or Utah that's going to have an effect, right?
And in fact, the impact isn't that dramatic. So, despite, you know, the statistical significance in here, the size of the effect is relatively small and probably attributable to the number of other users in your neighborhood, not necessarily seeing the ads.
Who are the people in your neighborhood? All right. let's go to this other one having to do with teenagers. It says, why a teen's reasons for using marijuana matter? And it went into whether or not they were being experimental or not and how that affected their later use of marijuana. What's the takeaway from this?
Well, I mean, so the bottom line, if you're just giving it a try, if you're just an experiment, you're less likely to go on and use hard drugs. And I mean, that's not a stunning fact, but an intriguing one. And I think what we really want to get the meta message across is that cannabis isn't for mood regulation for teens. We've got to all learn how to handle our own negative emotions. And that's an important skill to have and one that will develop during adolescence. Whereas, you know, the ones who say, I did it to feel good, to get high, or worse yet, to avoid a negative emotion, that's probably more likely to lead to problematic use. And Joey Palomar is a great guy, and he actually really looks hard at these data, and I like that he was super cautious, and at least some of the media coverage has been straightforward. But pot is not something to do just because you're bored or because you're sad and you don't know how to cope. It's, you know, an experiment when you're teens, and the truth you'd rather see you wait until your brain's full.
Yeah, my advice to teens is always, you got to handle reality before you can alter reality. I mean, when you're a kid, you're experiencing your first love, your first hate, your first vengeance, your first success. I mean, all these firsts are happening in your life. And it's like, all right, figure out that. Figure out reality. And second point I always make is if you're a teenager, you're already high. You got so many hormones running around in your head right now. You're already higher than you'll ever be in the rest of your life. Trust me. All right, let's get to this next one. This is a concern now as states are legalizing marijuana and people are fighting for the right to be able to use cannabis in a public setting, you know, kind of like a pub or whatever. And there's some that are concerned about the mixing of marijuana and alcohol. There's a study being reported on what happens when we do that. And what should we learn from this?
I mean, the bottom line, we've known this for over a decade. And I think casual users, even from the 1970s, will tell me, look, we always kind of knew this was the case. When you use them concurrently, basically, if you're going to use them one and then the other on another day, that's one thing. But to use them both simultaneously actually slows the THC metabolism. And I'm not saying that so that people can save on their cannabis bill so much as they can just be super cautious about this kind of mixing, because it really isn't adaptive. It's not as bad as, like, when alcohol gets mixed with cocaine, it actually creates this novel compound that's different from either of them and makes you know, drunk and narcissistic and ridiculous. But this is definitely going to slow your metabolism of the THC and lead to markedly more impairment than either one alone when it comes to things like driving. So a safe level of alcohol in the absence of cannabis with driving is not the same as an amount of alcohol with cannabis simultaneously.
Would this bolster the argument of folks like our Oregon Liquor Control Commission that are, you know, along the lines of you can have a pot bar, you can have an alcohol bar, but we shouldn't mix the two?
I hate to sound that restrictive. I'd like to think people can, you know, handle these things on their own, but the data are on that side. And I mean, the civil libertarian at me screams, oh, come on, everybody should be responsible for their own bodies. But I think the chance to have a bar that's devoted to cannabis really sounds delightful to me, and then you don't have some of the problems that are associated with alcohol consumption, and you don't have this extra worry of what's a safe level when both are there simultaneously.
All right, we're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. If you got a question, get it into our chat room, we'll get that answered, or you can call in toll free at 84-420 radio. And for this next story, you know, I'm reminded of this Twitter battle I got into last week with Scott Gagnon, one of these Project Sam guys up in Maine. And I was referring to this story that a news channel had put out about this couple that was high on pot at the Burger King and neglecting their baby. And it didn't get down to the 11th paragraph where it mentioned, oh yeah, they were also taking pain pills all day. Right. And Scott came back at me with, oh, so they didn't use the safer alternative. They used both. And I had to kind of lecture him on, you know, Berkeley Patients Group and how opioids and cannabinoids used together can lessen the need for more opioids. That's the question asked in this medical minute on Leafly. Is cannabis an effective substitute for opiate pain relievers? And I don't know if I'd go that far. What's your take on pain relief, opiates, and cannabinoids?
Well, the thing is, I definitely believe the data where it says, look, if you've got cannabinoids, you can decrease your use of opiates, and then that's really adaptive because then your tolerance isn't going to develop as rapidly. You don't get all those aversive side effects like the unspoken one, which is constipation. And then you also actually have the chance to see, would cannabis do the job on its own? And what's odd about that is that inverted U we've seen with the dosage. So it's too much is actually makes the pain worse, too little doesn't treat it enough, and finding that sweet spot can be different for different people. This kind of thing drives physicians crazy because they want to tell you, oh, you need 11 milligrams, when in fact you may need 12 or 9. And that's the advantage of having a vaporized dose that you're in charge of. But I actually do think that the supplement of cannabis with opiates has obvious advantages. And there's a chance that with some pain, cannabis could really substitute. You might not need the opiates at all if you've got a good strain and you're willing to experiment with your dosage.
You know, it sounds to me, when you're talking about having too much cannabis can actually make the pain worse and too little is not going to treat it, that that argues against wanting to mix, say, edibles and tinctures with opiates and maybe for smoking or vaporization where you'd have that finer control.
I agree, and you also have that rapid onset, so you don't have to wonder, what am I going to feel like in 2 hours?
Yeah.
You know? I really think that that's the way to go. The other thing is there's a lot of good pain management just with distraction, meditation, a lot of behavioral things. If your sleep is better, your pain tolerance is better. If you're under less stress, your pain tolerance is better. And I feel like those behavioral things sometimes get the short shrift just because we're quick to run to the chemicals.
And if you loudly exclaim curse words, your pain tolerance is better, I hear.
Oh, and what's funny is there's some laboratory evidence in support of that.
So. that's the interesting classroom to be next to, right? And I'm like, what the hell's going on over there?
Exactly.
One final story. I've been tracking in the Midwest and on the East Coast two different Church of Cannabis stories, and that's just a term I use generically to say people who use cannabis as a sacrament. There's Ann Armstrong and Alan Gordon out in Rhode Island trying to protest at the Roger Williams Memorial Well, which is, I guess, the birthplace of American religious freedom. And then in Indiana, you got this Bill Levin, who's formed this snarky little Church of Cannabis, he calls it, that he's the grand poobah of, and they're kind of making a mockery of the homophobic Religious Freedom Restoration Act there in Indiana. But generally speaking, as people try to fight for this right, a religious right to use cannabis, I mean, how much luck are they going to need to win this battle?
So I hate to say it, Timothy Leary, of all people, tried this decades ago, and it did not fly. I think the approaches to religion have changed a little bit since then, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg actually was not on the Supreme Court when she wrote the decision about this, and it essentially said, in their impression at least, the risk related to free religious use was higher than what was justified in order to make it free for a church. But I think our perception of risk has changed since then. I also feel like religious freedoms are much more in the forefront than they were even 30 years ago. So there's a chance this might fly, but unfortunately the way folks are treating it is so tongue-in-cheek that they may be hurting their own cause.
Yeah, it's. I've often characterized it as the decision was your sacrament's just too popular. Like the native churches can use ayahuasca and peyote because hardly anyone uses ayahuasca and peyote. But the minute we let legal pot use for religion, suddenly there's 26 million religious people in America.
And it's funny how of all things, here's a situation where popularity actually works against you.
Yeah, what a shame. All right, well, that's our time with Dr. Mitch here for our cannabis Q&A. And if you were just out there lurking, you're feeling a little shy, you've got a question, but you didn't want to talk about it or have people read it in a chat room or trace your IP address or anything like that, you can always email privately to Dr. Mitch. The email address is 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And he can respond privately, or we can bring it up on the air anonymously. There's all sorts of ways we can get your question answered. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant on Pacific Northwest medical marijuana drama queens. This will make me some friends.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Thank you. What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Well, folks, up here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got medical marijuana, and we've got recreational marijuana. We've got a shared border between Oregon and Washington State, where between both of these states, we have the most liberal marijuana policies in the world, the entire world, ladies and gentlemen, right here in the Pacific Northwest. And yet, if you listen to some of the people in the medical marijuana community, medical marijuana as we know it is over. Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about this because it's been progressing and progressing and progressing, this hyperbole, this making mountains out of molehills among the medical marijuana people, where any proposed change in any way means the death of the patients. So I just want to kind of squash this a little bit because I think it's getting a little bit absurd. Now, I understand how it evolved, right? If you go back to Prohibition, you go back to the 90s, you got your medical marijuana advocates who are working with people with cancer and AIDS and glaucoma, people that are, you know, suffering multiple sclerosis and epilepsy and chronic pain, some of the people in the worst condition health-wise you could imagine. And they would face a state government that, if they caught those people alleviating their symptoms with marijuana, would lock them up. Would lock them up in cages, try them, convict them, give them criminal records merely for trying to use this herbal, natural, non-toxic medication to make their lives better. So there's a whole lot of how dare you to the medical marijuana activism. It was putting the sickest people up in front of the legislature, up in front of the people, and saying, how dare you lock this person up? How dare you? And it was successful because largely at that time, the voters didn't like pot, didn't like stoners, didn't like legalization. It was about 2-1 against. So there was this moral issue involved of marijuana use being dirty and disgusting and a habit and a crime and losers use it, right? There's all this negative moral code involved with it, right? And when it comes to voting, there are very few people who read the actual issues and come up with logical, well, if this, then that, but if this, then that, and compare this to that. Most people don't do it that way. They vote out of identity. They are a Republican, or they are a Democrat, or they are a Christian, or they are a liberal, or whatever they might be. They vote because of who they are, and who they are is based on what they believe, their morals, their morality. So, people fighting for marijuana back in the 90s had to go with this I dare you tactic to upset the balance of the morality. They had to come up with something more morally repugnant than the stoner. And they did. They brought up the cancer patient, the paraplegic, the person with multiple sclerosis, and forced people into a moral dilemma. Yeah, I hate potheads, but I hate cancer more. yeah, I hate drug abuse, but I hate suffering people more. And that's how medical marijuana began in 96 in California, 98 in Oregon and Washington. And that kept going. Now, that outrage, that how dare you, continued throughout the medical marijuana era whenever it came time to make changes. Around 2005 in Oregon, it was about, you know, increasing the limits because we only had like 3 ounces and like 4 plants or something like that. And it got to be, well, how dare you have this person risking felonies for growing 12 plants when they've got such a severe condition? They've got to have more plants. They've got to have more medicine. How dare you? And it got it to be changed here in Oregon. We raised our limits up to the largest in the nation. 6 mature plants, 18 immature. Growers who could grow for patients, a third card. We're the only state that's got 3 cards, patient, caregiver, and grower. For every 1 sick person, 3 people can be exempted from the criminal laws on marijuana. Only state that does that. We allowed growers to grow for 4 patients each. So that's 24 mature plants that could be grown at a farm with 72 immature plants. And then growers started colluding together to all grow at the same address. So I'll bring my 4 patients, you bring your 4 patients, you bring your 4, you bring your 4. Now we got 16 patients. Now we can grow 96 plants and have 288 seedlings. Got to be massive marijuana farms. And with the limit of 1.5 pounds, people started, you know, making a whole bunch of concentrates, making a whole bunch of edibles. They had tons of marijuana. And something similar went down in Washington State. They had a 30-day or 60-day supply, something like that. A 60-day supply, I think it was, which was vague. You were in some rural county, they'd say your 60-day supply is 1 ounce. And you're in Seattle, they might say 8 ounces. So they had to come up with some limits. They decided, all right, well, our 60-day supply is going to be 15 plants, any size, and 24 ounces of possession. And there was actually a how dare you at that point, because the medical people were asking for 72 plants. They're saying every patient should be able to grow 72 plants. It was possess 72 ounces. Every patient should be able to possess 72 ounces of usable marijuana, right? And that got reduced down to 24. And there was a how dare you reduce it to just 24, the largest limit in the nation. So medical marijuana evolved with a whole bunch of this how dare you attitude in it, right? Because it's all about the patients, right? Well, now, as legalization's taking root, it's become, what about the patients? And when something comes along that taxes and regulates marijuana for everyone, and it's now reduced these medical marijuana allowances in the Pacific Northwest, the medical people are screaming, how dare you? When what they've been reduced to isn't really anything to be upset about. In Oregon, we got off the best. We still get our 6 plants per patient, 18 immature. We still get 24 ounces that each patient can maintain. But the how dare you moment for the medical people was no longer could a whole bunch of growers grow at one location. Any location, no matter how many growers, no matter how many patients associated with those growers, any location in a residential area will be limited to 12 mature plants. In a non-residential area will be limited to 48 mature plants. And if you currently have one of those big-ass grows, you can keep twice those limits, 24 plants in a residential, 96 plants in a non-residential, up until I don't know what the sunset date is, and then you'll have to kick down to just half that amount. And I got people all over the country that are listening to me right now going, wait. They're upset that they got restricted down to just 12 plants or 48 in a non-residential? Yes, they're pissed off about it. Washington State has a little worse. Washington State, they're no longer going to have their current dispensary system, which is this unregulated, untaxed dispensary system. That's going to go away. All stores are going to be I-502 stores. All marijuana will have a 37% excise tax that has to be paid by everybody, including patients. However, patients don't have to pay the state and local sales tax, and the patients will be limited down to just 3 ounces possession and be able to cultivate 6 plants. So they're going down from 24 ounces to 3, 15 plants to 6. But they do retain the right to cooperatively grow. Four patients can put together a co-op, and between the four of them, grow 60 plants. And that's where we're getting our "how dare you" out of the Washington State people. And now look, I agree. I mean, these people, all they can see is that now that legalization here is here, we're forcing the paralyzed, cancer-ridden hospice patient to pay 37% tax on medicine so stoners can get high. How dare we fuck over poor cancer patient? Well, to a degree, I kind of agree. I mean, taxing medicine is pretty Scroogian. That's pretty awful. And I also agree that no home grow for the non-medical people sucks. And I agree that the 5-nanogram DUID is bullshit. And I agree that a 37% tax is way too high. But the thing that sucks far more than all that is arresting 5,000 marijuana consumers a year for misdemeanor possession. It's having 2 out of 3 of all marijuana arrests still existing. It's having 4 out of 5 of all marijuana convictions still existing. Now, for a lot of these people, they have this do no harm, you know, first do no harm mentality when it comes to medical marijuana patients. In a sense, with them, our freedom as healthy cannabis consumers is held hostage to the ideal of a perfect medical marijuana program. And yes, they'll tell you, of course, we support marijuana legalization for all people, but only if it doesn't change medical marijuana one iota. And of course, that's impossible. Legalizing marijuana changes everything about medical marijuana. Legalizing marijuana actually calls into question the whole premise of medical marijuana. Why did we legalize medical marijuana? Because prohibition existed that would arrest sick people who had no choice but to use marijuana. Remember? How dare you lock up this sick person? Well, now that threat of arrest is gone. Nobody's going to get arrested for possessing personal amounts of marijuana. So what exactly are we exempting the medical users from anymore? There's also the inherent untenable idiocy of pretending there exists two different products, medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. It wasn't so obvious in Colorado. Their medical marijuana was limited and recreational just adapted within that program. But in the Pacific Northwest, patients were allowed to possess 1.5 pounds of usable marijuana and grow over a dozen plants and shop at a plethora of untaxed dispensaries. So legalizing rec marijuana with a 1 ounce limit, no home grow, and a few overtaxed retail outlets made medical marijuana stick out like Darth Vader at a Klan rally. I mean, these people want to pretend that medical marijuana in the Pacific Northwest was cruising along just fine, beloved by the public and tolerated by legislators, and would have continued to do so with no changes if only those meddling kids and their recreational marijuana hadn't come along. But folks, it wasn't. Cities across both states were banning dispensaries because of their obvious winking and nudging about the true medical need of their customers. The legislators were hankering for a crackdown on the most obvious abuses, and even the public was growing weary of massive, unregulated marijuana farms. There were serious changes coming for the Pacific Northwest in medical marijuana before legalization, but legalization shone a spotlight on just how much medical marijuana needed to be reined in. And so now these Washington State people, who used to have the most liberal medical marijuana program in the country, aside from California, thanks to the new law, they go from first place to sixth place. They're one of 13 of the 25 medical jurisdictions that allow home grow. They get more mature plants, but all but 3 states. But their doctor can recommend more. They get more pot possession than all but 5 states. They're one of only 3 voluntary patient registries. They've got the lowest price per ounce, even with tax, than every state but Oregon. The patients can form 4-person co-ops and grow 60 plants, unlike any other state. They're only one of 13 covering all the big 8 conditions. Only one of 2 that cover renal failure. I can think of 30 states that wish they were as devastated as Washington State.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio from Roller J Studios in legal Potland, Oregon. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. You